Okay, Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go. It's about a minute past the hour. This is the 15th day of February 2016. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go if you want to wander into the chat room, a rollicking sort of place. Just go to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, click on chat room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and jump in and join in the real-time multimedia extravaganza that happens for the 3 hours that this program is live every evening. Good evening to Anatole, Jug of Punch, Little Gray, Texas T, Tim from L.A., and Laborman, all wandering into the chat room here at the beginning of the program. Others will be along as they see fit. We don't stand on ceremony around here, and nobody has to stand in the corner if they're a couple of minutes late to the program. I'm the only one that has to be on time, and from time to time, I'm not even. But usually that has something to do with gremlins or technical nightmares, you know, those things that attend small independent broadcast operations that don't have vast, highly paid staffs. We've got a staff, and it can be vast from time to time. It's just it ain't highly paid. With that matter, it ain't paid. That's because this is a little independent, listener-supported operation. We try to raise $200 every evening just to keep the program on the air, keep all the packets passing and the electrons doing whatever it is that electrons do. And, well, let's not talk about the neutrons. But we try to raise $200 every evening. We closed the week last week in a hole. We ended somewhere around $360 short. That got significantly cut down over the course of the weekend, and thank you very kindly to Tracy, the lady cab driver. Thank you to Kevin. Thank you to James, and thank you to our subscribers. Yes, indeed. Thank you to Bob up in North Dakota, and thank you to Harold. Thank you very kindly. So all of that having been... Yeah, we've got about $260. So we're about $60 in the hole. We've got about $260 to raise this evening. Fortunately, that's 10 at 26, 26 at 10, et cetera, et cetera. You can go over to headonradionetwork.com and click on the Contribute tab, and there's a screen there. You fill it out. It's for PayPal. You don't have to worry about that field where we try to find out what it is when you're working, sitting there counting all the money for JP Gottrocks. No. You can leave that blank. You just go to the next screen, and that's where you make your choices. You know, your PayPal, your MasterCard, your Visa, your American Express, your Discover. I don't think we take Diners Club, but whatever. But that's how we keep this on the air. For those who would like to help out via the postal system who do not like PayPal, and there are several of you, and that's okay, the mailing address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, West Virginia, West by God, Virginia, 25801, with the kind caveat that cash is not such a good idea because as much as we love the U.S. Postal Service, they do from time to time have a bit of a pilferage problem. So we recommend checks and money orders not made payable to Bob Kincaid, but made payable to the Horn. As Bob Kincaid never sees these things, Boss Man Wayne goes to the mailbox, puts on his spider-proof gloves, and reaches into the echo chamber, where he then tries to hopefully will find something awaiting him. Quite often, it's nothing but an echo and a really big spider with sharp, nasty teeth, and hence the gloves. But sometimes, yes, there is, and thank you very kindly to those of you who participate in keeping us on the air via your contributions through the United States Postal Service. Okay, so we've got all of that out of the way. It's 5 minutes past the hour. Like I said, 15th day of February, 2016, and who am I going to kid? This program wrote itself Saturday evening. Granted, ordinarily, this is a Monday, so that means it would be more in Monday, and in association with the topic that will probably dominate the course of the program this evening. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Hey, see, right there is Tim with regarding the SCOTUS. Who the are you? Thank you, Tim. Thank you very kindly. I'd forgotten it. Yes, I am. I really am. I'm Bob Kincaid. And this is the Horn, and we will we'll try to get through 3 hours of broadcasting this evening, independent, progressive broadcasting, that I like to think is considerably different, and I think there's a general consensus as well, is considerably different from anything that you may hear anywhere else, among other things. We will never break the course and scope of this program in order to entice you to buy gold now. There's never been a better time to buy gold. Gold is your best hedge against inflation. Here at Buy Gold Now, we want you to buy high and sell low, sucker. Yep, that's right, that's right. And if you do, well, we'll also send you a Swedish mattress made of foam invented by NASA, and we'll send a guy over, a seedy-looking little fellow with thinning hair, and he'll drop a bowling ball on your Swedish mattress and pick it up with a vacuum cleaner. That's right, that's right, that's right. All as you lie there in indolent bliss, waiting for your herbal erection and hair growth remedies to kick in as you listen to your Bose Wave radio in your General Steel building on your what's the name of that wood company that sells flooring. I think I've pretty much covered the entirety of right-wing radio advertising there, haven't I? Yes. Mm-hmm. But this program did. It wrote itself Wednesday evening. Or Saturday evening. It wrote itself the other night. This is Monday, right? Yeah, good. Jesus, I hate it when I come unstuck in time. But no, it wrote itself Saturday evening with the news that, yay, verily, wait, I think I need something here. We need to make this appropriately solemn. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Yep, there it is. Okay, so we're going to be... No, I don't want freaking commentary. I want the actual... I guess I'm going to have to add the magic at KJV. I'm going to have to add that to the search request. Mm-hmm. Because, well, you know what happened Saturday. Mm-hmm. One of the most evil men in the United States of America quit the planet. Justice Antonin, and really the word justice should never have been appended to his name. Antonin Uncle Nino, formerly known as Fat Tony Scalia. Let's see, Ecclesiastes 12, 6, and 7. Or ever the silver cord be loosened, we're going to need some reverb for this, damn it. Or ever the silver cord be loosed, or the golden bowl be broken, or the pitcher be broken at the fountain, or the wheel broken at the cistern, then shall the dust return to the earth as it was, and the spirit shall return unto God who gave it. Yeah, I know, it's not Wednesday yet. Oh, Lumber Liquidators, thank you very kindly, Carol Baker. I never would have remembered it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, okay, we've done our Bibling thing there. Antonin Scalia decided to take another one of those free trips he was famous for taking. And he sallied forth from wherever it is that he calls home and flew to a remote corner of West Texas to something called Cibolo Ranch, where he had a lovely Friday evening and everybody was all tuckered out, according to published reports, and everybody was tucked away safely in bed by 10 p.m. that night. Mm-hmm. Well, the next morning, everybody got up and got ready to go out and do ranchy things, like going out and shooting at birds that had spent their lives in a cage and had no idea what to... Well, never mind. They also hunt mountain lion and bison stuff, again, raised in cages. And never mind. It's a right wing guy thing. We probably wouldn't understand. But they laid out the big old breakfast spread there, and everybody came down but Uncle Nino. They thought Uncle Nino was maybe just sleeping in. He'd had a big day, long day, and they waited a while, and a little bit later, they got a little perturbed because he still wasn't down there, and it's not like they'd seen any strippers or hookers or meth dealers or anything slipping out of the room late at night. So they went ahead and unlocked his door, and they found him laying there in the bed, deader than Pharaoh's house cat. And then the paroxysms of, oh, what the shall we ever do? That Kenyan Muslim usurper is going to ruin Merca now. It began. Mm-hmm. And so that's probably going to eat up most of the program tonight. Robert in Morgantown says, oh, come on, Bob, let's make this a revival week at the Horn. Amen. And I admit I was not my best self. I reveled. I admit it. I reveled. Not so much because one man was dead. Well, but rather than me saying what, let me share with you some thoughts from the Horn Family Community Congregation. Let's do that. Let's start, for instance, with Queen of the Minions, Carol Baker. I got a note from Carol late last night, early this morning. Dear Bob, and I think Carol wanted to put this down in written form because, you know, when we have conversations here on the Horn, they can get on track pretty quick. And I think Carol wanted to make sure that she got everything said that was on her mind. Dear Bob, early Saturday evening, like the rest of the world, I learned of the death of Justice Antonin Scalia. Social media was all Uncle Nino all the time until the start of the GOP debate. Normally, a GOP debate wouldn't have been a welcome distraction, but I could take no more of talking heads on chicken noodle news. One testimonial after another about how charming he was, how funny he was. What an amazing mind he had. I drew the line at a lifetime of service to this country and could take no more. As a person in possession of finely honed gallows humor, I reflected on the reality of this human stain being cosmically removed from a position of influence and power. My first few comments included, tonight, Lady Justice must feel like a gang rape victim upon hearing that one of her five assailants is dead. And then, God to Scalia. Sorry, Nino. I had you down for a few more years. But I got so goddamn tired of hearing that oxymoron, Justice Scalia. That was when my inbox started filling up with supposed liberal commentators too chicken shit to comment in public.
Carol, Justice Scalia was a human being. If you're going to talk like that, we can't be friends anymore. I mean, seriously, what are we fighting for when liberals celebrate the death of a public servant?
I thought I was fighting for the soul of my country by stating the obvious, Carol continues. And given how Uncle Nino spoke of select groups, I'd hardly classify him as a human being. As for hanging the title public servant around his neck, there's an idea. Never mind, he's dead. He's dead, Jim. I actually laughed out loud. Servant to whom? The very people trying to dismantle everything we've spent generations working so hard for?
Then there was this. You're nothing but a passive-aggressive nutjob with a serious messianic complex.
Interestingly, I think I was most offended at the passive part of passive-aggressive. I've always considered myself aggressive, Carol says. As for any sort of God complex, I've yet to hold anyone hostage in my circle of social media connections, and, well, they know where the door is. Bob, essentially, this is what I remember of Scalia on the bench. 1. Gays are animals. 2. Blacks are stupid. 3. Women are baby-killing whores. 4. Corporations deserve more human rights than actual humans, especially where money equating to speech is involved. And 5. Killing mentally disabled and even innocent people is perfectly cool. I, personally, Bob Kincaid, editorializing here, would add a 6th. And hey, y'all are going to love having George W. Bush as president. Wait till you see the wars he starts. I mean, when those cardboard boxes full of biological material that used to be your loved ones start coming home, I'm telling you, it's going to be great. Leave the corpses, take the cannoli. But that's me. Carol continues. Let me share with you a few of Uncle Nino's greatest hits. On marriage equality. Of course, it is our moral heritage that one should not hate any human being or class of human beings. But I had taught that one could consider certain conduct reprehensible. Murder, for example, or polygamy or cruelty to animals, and could exhibit even animus towards such conduct. No, really. Scalia compared homosexuals to other such reprehensible categories of individuals, such as murderers, polygamists, and people who beat animals in his 1996 dissent in Romer v. Evans. That case ruled that states cannot ban anti-discrimination protections for gay or bisexual people. Scalia also declared in his famous dissent, or infamous, if you will, this court has no business imposing upon all Americans the resolution favored by the elite class from which the members of this institution are selected, pronouncing that animosity toward homosexuality is evil. I vigorously dissent. On African-American college students' right to an education in a top-tier school. There are those who contend that it does not benefit African Americans to get them into the University of Texas, where they do not do well, as opposed to having them go to a less advanced school, a slower track school, where they do well. One of the briefs pointed out that the most of the black scientists in this country don't come from schools like the University of Texas. They come from lesser schools, where they do not feel they're being pushed ahead in classes that are too fast for them.
Scalia's comments came during arguments in Fisher versus University of Texas, a case over whether the university's use of race in a sliver of its admissions decisions is constitutional. His decision meant that the number of black students went from 25% down to 10%. And by the way, he didn't say some African-Americans. He said African-American, you know, like in all. Then there's Uncle Nino on reproductive rights and equal pay. Carroll says Scalia didn't limit himself to reactionary ideologies based on sexual orientation. Ironically, his bigotry embraced the diversity and equality that he claimed the Constitution lacked. During a 2011 interview with California Lawyer magazine, Scalia said,
"Certainly, the Constitution does not require discrimination on the basis of your sex. The only issue is whether it prohibits it. It don't. Nobody ever thought that that's what it meant. Nobody ever voted for that. If the current society wants to outlaw discrimination by sex, hey, we have these things called legislatures, and they enact things called laws.
Women. Can't live with them, can't stand having to sit on the Supreme Court with them because they're hysterical, shrieking, fetus viability, redefining banshees. Sandra Day O'Connor had already made the mistake of becoming the first woman on the United States Supreme Court. Then, adding insult to injury, she refused to join Scalia's effort to overturn Roe v. Wade and Webster v. Reproductive Health Services, 1989. Always a gentleman, Scalia offered O'Connor some subtle and respectful constructive criticism, describing her reasoning as irrational and not to be taken seriously. Now let's take a look at his absolute joy in gutting the Voting Rights Act. During the oral arguments in Shelby County versus Holder, 2013, Scalia referred to voting rights as perpetual racial entitlements, the passage of which is very likely attributable to a phenomenon that is called perpetuation of racial entitlement. It's been written about. Whenever a society adopts racial entitlements, it is very difficult to get out of them through the normal political processes. I don't think there is anything to be gained by any senator to vote against continuation of this act. Right. Yeah, because voting rights are like food stamps. You give it to the wrong colors for a while, and pretty soon they want to eat every day and vote every time. And finally, in his effort to take the Darwin Award, he had this to say about the death penalty. Executing intellectually disabled people. Kosher. Interestingly, when it came to the death penalty, Scalia wasn't as critical of the kind of groupthink that tricks people into supporting voting rights. In his dissent in Atkins versus Virginia, 2002, which barred executing people with mental disabilities, Scalia defended sentencing retarded people to death because everybody's doing it.
The fact that juries continue to sentence mentally retarded offenders to death for extreme crimes shows that society's moral outrage sometimes demands execution of retarded offenders.
Executing innocent people, also kosher. Scalia went so far as to argue that executing the innocent didn't even violate the Constitution.
This court has never held that the Constitution forbids the execution of a convicted defendant who has had a full and fair trial, but is later able to convince a habeas court that he is actually innocent. Yeah, quite to the contrary, we have repeatedly left that question unresolved, while expressing considerable doubt that any claim based on alleged actual innocence is constitutionally cognizable.
So, in Justice Scalia's world,
The law has no problem with sending an innocent man to die. One wonders why we even bother to have a constitution. So you see, Bob, it's not so much that I'm in any way celebrating the death of Uncle Nino. It's more that I'm celebrating the untold lives that will not be ruined by the craven mind who damaged so many people for so long. I'm celebrating the actual lives that will be saved because this festering pustule is no longer a boil on the butt of humanity. So if that makes me a bad person, then I'm a bad person. Those same people trying to shame me for rejoicing over the saved lives can take a smooch of my big old fat ass. I remember these same people rejoicing over the killing of Osama bin Laden by SEAL Team 6. Bin Laden possessed the intellectual honesty to admit he hated Americans. Uncle Nino did it under the guise of a Supreme Court justice, one hand sliding the blindfold off Lady Justice's eyes and the other hand offering the John Birchers a reach around. I figured if I was taking this kind of crap shit from people, you were probably getting it too. I'm not ready to put Uncle Nino up for sainthood quite yet, unless they're willing to pray to him at Our Lady of Perpetual Fascism. So please, play the funeral dirge of your choosing, Bob. Something up-tempo, if you don't mind, Maestro. Sincerely, Carol. And you know it's true. Even for the folks who think that we should wait 2 or 3 days before we start talking about what was that word, pustule, he was in life. At some point in time, we have to talk about what a pustule he was in life. One thing that Carol left out is a fairly recent vintage. A week back, one of the last things he officially did as a member of the Supreme Court of the United States was to vote in favor of an almost unheard of practice. Namely, staying the operation of an entire federal regulation pending complete litigation of it by every lunatic attorney general in this country who wanted to file a lawsuit to make the teabaggers happy. I'm talking, of course, about the Clean Power Plan. The Clean Power Plan, of course, is a mild and meek regulatory attempt to make it appear that the United States is trying to do something, anything, any little teeny tiny thing to alleviate the root causes of climate change. In particular, the Clean Power Plan dealt with the crap that daily comes out of the smokestacks of coal-fired power plants, the particulate matter of which, not even carcinogenic, just particulate matter, the particulate matter of which is responsible, last I read, for something like 40,000 statistical excess deaths per year in the United States alone. Okay. And then, of course, there's the quantum effects of coal-fired power plants on things like climate change generally, sea level rise specifically, the global overall warming of the planet, moving toward levels of heat this planet has not seen since before there were human beings, and which, taken together, account for countless numbers of lives lost already, and more in both the immediate and long-term future. Antonin, God only knows what his middle name was, Scalia. Probably it was Benito. You know his daddy is said to have been the leader of the pro-Mussolini support group prior to the Second World War here in the United States. One of his last acts was to try to stop that pathetically weak attempt at regulatory legislation. Well, when the universe decided to remove him from our midst, and look, comes for all of us. Ask not for whom the bell tolls and all that shit. It comes for all of us. But when the universe decided to cleanse itself of the presence of Antonin Scalia, it did so in the positive behalf, whether it is conscious of it or not, of millions of people. There are literally people who will be alive going into the future because Antonin Scalia died when he did. Okay. How is that so? Let me explain. He voted, Scalia did. He voted to stay the Clean Power Plan. But that was only a stay pending full litigation. Eventually, it was going to wind up before the Supreme Court. At which point, those people that we referred to as the rats, Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia, plus that Kennedy kid, could be quite reliably counted upon to strike that weak and only marginally effective piece of legislation down as unconstitutional. They would have done this not because it is unconstitutional, but in fact because the rats plus that Kennedy guy are repulsive political hacks whose only joy in life comes from trying to prevent that one in our White House from accomplishing anything that a president with, shall we say, paler skin would have accomplished. But now, because the wheel is broken beside the cistern and the golden bowl is on the loose and the silver cord is, whatever. He doesn't get to do that. There are no longer rats on the Supreme Court, just a rat plus that Kennedy guy. That's four. There are four who can hopefully be relied upon unless out of some sense of terrifying sympathy, they decide to cast a Scalia ghost vote, who can be counted on to uphold the Clean Power Plan. In which case, guess what? In those circuits where the Clean Power Plan was allowed to stand, it stands. In those places where it does not, it does not. And then there's the note we got from Ron in Raleigh. This came in about 39 minutes before airtime. Subject line, please explain why. Hey, Bob, says Ron. When I went to get my Sunday paper, the headline jumped out at me, Conservative Justice Scalia dies 79. To tell you the truth, I had a moment of unalloyed glee. People say that you shouldn't speak ill of the dead. Please explain why. Antonin Scalia was a nasty, mean-spirited, racist son of a bitch, and I'm quite frankly glad he has gone on to his long home. See Ecclesiastes Supra. We'll use some legal jingo tonight as a memorial. Supra. He lived a long life, and for 30 years as a Supreme Court justice, brought misery to the bulk of everyday people. Just like here in North Carolina, when his fellow racist died, all the platitudes are starting to roll in. I say, screw that. Tell the truth. Maybe his family will miss him, but I won't. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that family? Hey, did you know this? Because I ran across this in the course of my research over the weekend. Did you know this? Back when Uncle Nino was helping to force we, the people of the United States, into coping with the 8-year-long reign of error of George W. Bush, guess who had two of his spawn working as lawyers inside the George W. Bush campaign? That's right, David's no. That's right, Antonin Benito Scalia. No, really? I don't know what the hell his middle name was. But Antonin Scalia perceived no conflict of interest whatsoever in judging a case in which his sons were already lawyers in the background. My, what monumental ethics that man didn't have. Then there was the whole gone duck hunting with Cheney thing, while Cheney's secret energy task force case was up before the Supreme Court. Did Scalia absent himself, recuse himself? Oh, hell no! That's for other people. He just marched right in and said, let him eat cake. Or something. Right? Yeah, he did. Meanwhile, Steve in China says, subject line, in passing, Bob, no one is bad for taking jabs at the deceased, but the silly cartoon voice only makes the user seem less intelligent. The man was, after all, a badly drawn caricature to begin with. Can a caricature be drawn badly? Well, I disagree. I just got tired. I didn't want to sit there and say, quote, unquote, quote, unquote. So instead, I did the traditional Antonin Scalia voice that I've been doing for years. So there you go. There is a lot of stuff that's kind of on hold right now. Because the vacancy in the court, again, creates what is presumably a 4-4 deadlock. Again, assuming that one of the liberal members of the Supreme Court doesn't decide to cast a grief vote for Uncle Nino. Please, Jesus, tell me that's not going to happen. among other things, as News Ninja Gene shares, the Friedrichs case. You remember the Friedrichs case? Or not? The Friedrichs case, Friedrichs versus California Teachers Association, is a case that was that the Supreme Court had decided to hear, primarily so the rats plus that Kennedy guy could blow it up. The plaintiffs in Friedrichs are a bunch of anti-union people. They want to be represented by the union. They want the union to go to bat for them when they show up drunk at work, that kind of thing. But they don't want to pay dues. And they don't want any of their monies being used for political purposes, which they've already got a right to check out of anyway. Well, the plaintiffs in Friedrichs ran a scam through an organization called the Center for Individual Rights. And they went into court and asked the courts to rule against them in a hurry. I mean, this is within a gnat's ass hair of fraud on the court. They went in and said, "We want to lose, Your Honor." Okay, you lose. So they could hustle it up through the court system and get it in front of the Supreme Court. And they got their wishes. It's there now. But unless they took the vote before Uncle Nino shuffled off this mortal coil, well, it's all going to be for naught. Because in the case of a tie, the lower court ruling wins. And the lower court ruling was a loss for the anti-union jerks. Whoops. Oh, what tangled webs we weave when... Yeah, whatever Shakespeare said. Oh, thank you, Ray. Ray tells me that Uncle Nino's middle name was Gregory. Now, this, in turn, leaves us with the question of what next? Which, in turn, is determined by Article 2, Section 2, of the Constitution of the United States, Article 1 being the legislative branch, Article 2 being the president, Article 3 being the judiciary. This is a president and thing. Ray, for instance, writes and says, "I've read that during congressional recess, Obama can put anyone he wants on the Supreme Court via a recess appointment, and the Senate can do nothing to stop it." Well, let us go over to Article 2, Section 2 of the Constitution of the United States. We will read it in its pertinent full first. "The President shall be Commander-in-Chief of the Army and Navy of the United States and of the Militia of the several states when called into the actual service of the United States." Important part that, but not to us today. "He may require the opinion in writing of the principal officer in each of the executive departments upon any subject relating to the duties of their respective offices, and he shall have power to grant reprieves and pardons for offenses against the United States except in cases of impeachment." Okay. all of which is absolutely irrelevant to our present inquiry. Here's where it matters. Here's what matters. The president... No, I'm sorry. That was the first paragraph. Second paragraph is just a... A pronoun, not the president. He shall have power by and with the advice and consent of the Senate. And this is important, okay? Words mean things. James Madison wrote this, okay? And James Madison didn't... James Madison was, despite the fact that his written work is difficult to comprehend, that's not Madison's fault. That's ours. Most people in the United States do not read and comprehend English on the same level that Madison wrote it. He shall have the power. What power? The power of hoodoo. Hoodoo? You do. What? Have the power. Never mind. Be serious, Bob. He shall have power. Shall. Not may. Shall. Most affirmative here. He shall have power, comma, by and with the advice and consent of the Senate, comma. Okay. To make treaties, provided 2/3 of the senators present concur, semicolon. Again, not necessarily salient to our inquiry at the moment. And he shall nominate, and by and with the advice and consent of the Senate, again, shall, not may, not might, shall nominate, and by and with the advice and consent of the Senate, shall appoint ambassadors, other public ministers, and consuls, judges of the Supreme Court, and all other officers of the United States. And other verbiage that is not applicable. Oh, hell, maybe there's some wingnut listening. Whose appointments are not herein otherwise provided for, and which shall be established by law, but the Congress may by law vest the appointment of such inferior officers as they think proper in the President alone, in the courts of law, or in the heads of departments. Okay? Now, what we have here is an interesting... turn of phrase. He shall nominate, and by and with the advice and consent of the Senate, shall appoint ambassadors, other public ministers, and consuls, judges of the Supreme Court. What exactly does that mean? That inquiry becomes relevant because at present, with everything from, for instance, Senator Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, anointed future king of America, son of Rafael Eduardo Cruz, the man who forgot to become an American for a very long time, vowing a filibuster, to little Marco Rubio, saying that Barack Obama simply doesn't have the right because he's in the final year of his presidency to appoint a successor to Justice Scalia. For some reason, I keep wanting to say Alito. Is the universe hinting at something? These things come in threes, you know. Anyway, Mitch McConnell says there will be, it doesn't matter if President Obama nominates a justice to the Supreme Court, that there will not be a hearing. The chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee is one Chuck Grassley from Iowa. He, too, has indicated that he is unwilling in the Judiciary Committee, which would hold be the committee charged with holding the hearings for any nominee that Barack Obama might send up, that he's unwilling to even hold the hearings at all. Not that he's willing to hold the hearing and whatever appointment Barack Obama sends up is going to be DOA, but that he flat won't hold the hearing. The reason being cited for this is that so-called lame duck presidents in the final year of their presidency, that there's some sort of precedent out there that says that they don't get to appoint Supreme Court justices or anybody of consequence in the final year of their presidency. Why does all this matter? Well, one of the reasons that all of this matters is because Antonin Scalia, whatever else he was, and God knows, as we have already seen, he was many things: misogynist, racist, bigot, homophobe. Whatever else he was, he named himself a constitutional originalist. A phrase that he pretty much invented, and a legal philosophy that of which he was the most visible proponent. Now, what does constitutional originalism mean? Constitutional originalism means that you judge the Constitution and you judge cases of constitutionality coming before the court on the original intent of the people who wrote it. This, he claimed, was the reason for the way he ruled in, for instance, Heller versus D.C., which has unleashed a firearms hell upon these United States, and for which innocent deaths alone, if hell was really real, would be sufficient, I would think, to an all-knowing, all-seeing, all-loving Almighty to pinch his little head off and flick it like a booger into the eternal lake of lasting fire. Everlasting fire. Lucky for him, I don't believe in hell. Now, he was, of course, very famously not just a Roman Catholic, but a hardcore Roman Catholic. One of those people who thought that Vatican II, back in the early 1960s, was a bunch of sissified panty-wasting. And that the church had gone far astray. He, among other things, despised Pope Francis, currently visiting in Mexico. More on that, perhaps, if we get time. As a famously Orthodox Roman Catholic, he was, of course, a believer in the sacrament of extreme unction, or last rites, as you and I know them. Now, I mention this because this goes hand in hand with his constitutional originalism, which he only used when it suited him. Now, I will leave it up to the hardcore Roman Catholics like him to say otherwise, but one of the tricks about extreme unction is that you have to be alive to get it. Anything else is cheating. There's even a word for what happens when you die without having been first cleared of your sins. It's called dying unshriven. Famously, Hamlet and most of the plot of Hamlet, and Shakespeare, we think, was pretty clearly Roman Catholic. Hamlet is in the tormented mental state that he is in because his daddy, Hamlet, had died unshriven as Claudius poured poison into his ear as he napped under a tree. Claudius being Hamlet, the elder Hamlet's brother. Dying unshriven meant that heaven was unattainable to Hamlet's father. And so if we understand Hamlet as a long revenge drama about Hamlet wanting to give the same to Uncle Claudius, well, you begin to understand how serious dying unshriven is. And it's not an entirely foreign concept. The plot, for instance, of Sophocles' Antigone has to do with her violating her father's law that her rebellious brothers be left upon the battlefield to be eaten by carrion rather than being given a decent burial. Now, what did that mean to the ancient Greeks? It meant that the shades of Antigone's brothers were cursed to forevermore wander the earth most unhappily. When you die, you were supposed to cross the river Styx and go to the underworld that was administered by Hades, and just sort of live in a perpetual eternal limbo there, which was deemed to be better than wandering the earth. Ancient Greeks, go figure. But these are literal interpretations, okay? I don't believe in things like extreme unction or shrivenness or any of that business, nor do I believe in ghosties, ghouls, and goblins. I am a rational man of the 21st century. But Scalia was a literalist and an originalist. One must judge the Constitution on the plain meaning of the words the framers wrote, and not some modernist interpretation of them. Well, we've already gone through those plain words, haven't we? And he shall nominate and by and with the advice and consent of the Senate, shall appoint ambassadors, other public ministers and consuls, judges of the Supreme Court, and all other officers of the United States. Yada, yada, yada. But the operative phrase ends at Supreme Court. And he shall nominate, and by and with the advice and consent of the Senate, shall appoint ambassadors, other public ministers and consuls, judges of the Supreme Court. Now, the shall pretty clearly applies to nominate. The question is, how about the and by and with the advice and consent of the Senate part? Shall appoint. I mean, that's, again, Madison was, oh God, Dr. Bill, why did you pick this time to be on the road? I need you. Why do we get nominate and appoint? Because in James Madison's world, they are words with entirely separate meaning. There's no superfluity here. He shall nominate. In other words, the president says, I want her to be a Supreme Court justice. And by the and with the advice and consent of the Senate, shall appoint. There's nothing in there about the Senate being able or empowered to go into a pout because the president is a Negro in the last 11 months of his presidency. We must also recall that at the time this was written, because again, remember, we are doing this from the Scalian perspective. We must recall that at the time this was written, there was no such thing as a term limit upon the presidency. At the time that this Constitution was written, had Barack Obama... Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know. In this document, he's three-fifths of a human being. I know. What do you want? James Madison was a slave owner. But at the time this was written, had Barack Obama wanted to seek a third term, and I kind of wish he could. Not that I don't love Bernie. I do. But I think you get my point. He could have been seeking a third term. So, hey, what about, yeah, I mean, we put a term limit on the president, right? Maybe it's there. Maybe the 22nd Amendment has it. No, I don't think so, because we went over this. There's some bizarre stuff in there, but this ain't it. No person shall be elected to the office of the president more than twice, and no person who has held the office of president or acted as president for more than 2 years of a term to which some other person was elected as president shall be elected to the office of the president more than once, but this article shall not apply to any person holding the office of president when this article is proposed by the Congress and shall not prevent any person who may be holding the office of president or acting as president during the term within which this article becomes operative from holding the office of president or acting as president during the... Nope, it ain't there. So it's pretty clear, isn't it, that chinless Mitch McConnell
has no leg upon which to stand. In deciding to throw a hissy. And all of this bilge about how the American people should get a voice in who the next... The American people got a voice. They got it in 2012, and they used their voices to tell Bishop Willard Romney to take his 47% and go the hell home. The Thurmond Rule? Bullshit. That's the one that says that you don't get to do anything in the last year of your term in office. Well, it ain't a rule. That's just something that nasty old rapist Strom Thurmond tried to promulgate. And it damn sure didn't have any effect on Ronnie Reagan back when he nominated that Kennedy kid to the Supreme Court in his last year in office. Oh, no. Not a bit of, no. And bear in mind that at the time, we all now understand, at the time that Reagan nominated that Kennedy kid to the bench, his brain was already being Swiss cheesed by Alzheimer's disease. By pretty much a... unanimous understanding of Ronald Reagan's status at the time. Did the Senate pitch a fit and stomp their feet and hold their breath till they turned blue? No. They went about the business of being the United States Senate, and because elections have consequences, they gave Ronald Reagan what he wanted. And by the way, it was a Democratic Senate. It wasn't some compliant Republican Senate. And confirmed the Kennedy guy to the Supreme Court of the United States. How glaringly obvious is this? It is so glaringly obvious that even Joke Toad over at Meet the Press could see it. Joke Toad. Little Marco Rubio showed up to have a fit there and to cry and complain about that big, mean Kenyan Muslim usurper in our White House having the unmitigated uppityness to think that he could nominate a Supreme Court justice. And even Joke Toad wasn't having anything to do with it. Oh, no.
He said earlier this morning that he would...
Oh, wait a minute. This is George Snuffleupagus.
Taking the same position?
Yeah, but he won't have to because Mitch McConnell's already made it very clear that we're not going to move forward until there's an election. And I think that's the right decision. The court can function with eight justices. In the last year, within the last few months of the president's term, we should not be appointing Supreme Court justices. Now, the president could go ahead and nominate whoever he wants. The Senate shouldn't move forward on it until...
Yeah, we should not be in the... Did you catch that? We? Is he the Queen of England?
In the last year, within the last few months of the president's term, we should not be appointing Supreme Court justices.
Yeah, we? No, 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 little Marco, you're right. We should not be appointing Supreme Court justices. The president of the United States, according to Article 2, Section 2 of the Constitution, should nominate and by and with the advice and consent of the Senate, appoint. Well, maybe it is we. I don't. Kind of... Funny language, isn't it? Oh, let's cut little Marco some slack.
Now, the president could go ahead and nominate whoever he wants. The Senate shouldn't move forward on it until after the election. We're going to have an election in November. One of the key...
So if you're elected president, will you promise not to make an appointment in your final year?
Yeah, well, I'm not saying the president can't make an appointment. I'm saying we're not going to move forward on it in the Senate. And that has been the practice now for over 80 years. He shouldn't.
That's been the practice for over 80 years. I think little Marco's worse at the Cyphers and the Gazettas than I am. Because I'm 53. And Eisenhower used the recess appointment to appoint Brennan. And no, that's definitely not 80 years. Fucking liar.
Legal right to do it, but and as president, I would recognize that precedent. And the precedent that's been set over the last 80 years has been that in the last year of a president's term, in his second term especially, there should not be Supreme Court nominees put into lifetime positions for a president that you're not going to be able to hold accountable at the ballot box.
Well, wait, just a damn minute, little fella. Under that rubric, the president shouldn't, given the effect of the 22nd Amendment, the president should not be allowed to appoint a Supreme Court justice at any time during his second term in office. Huh? Yeah. These people are some seriously stupid. You know, you know what I want to do? I want to hand a boot full of piss to Marco Rubio and tell him the directions for how to dump it out or on the heel and see if he can manage the job.
There's going to be an election in November. This is going to be an issue in the election. The voters are going to choose a new president, and that new president...
Yeah, wait. That's it. It's not that the presidential term is three years. It's like, no. It's that Barack Obama is only 3/5 of a president.
Who I believe will be me, should then fill that vacancy for a lifetime appointment to the Supreme Court.
Started with Senator Rubio.
Now here's Joke Toad.
Asking him whether the Senate has an obligation to give the president's Supreme Court nominee an up or down vote.
We have an obligation to do it, but not now. The term of the Supreme Court is already, or they just started it, but it's not all year long. The court can function with 8 justices. It does it all the time, especially when justices have to recuse themselves. For example, Kagan had to recuse herself early in her term because she just left the administration. We're going to have an election in November where this vacancy is going to be an item of debate, and voters are going to get to weigh in. So I just don't think it's wise, and there's precedent for this, for a president nearing the last few months of his administration.
Precedent. Now, we've already shown that there was the appointment of Anthony Kennedy came in the final year of Reagan's second term. Justice Brennan was a recess appointment near to election time in another year. Precedent.
You keep using the word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
I don't think it means what he thinks it means either in a go. I think, in point of fact, Marco Rubio would be far better running a campaign for middle school class president.
To put someone on the court that may be there for 30 years.
So you don't think that... I understand
perhaps,
that. And I understand the decision that you may not support, that the Republican majority doesn't want this, but aren't they obligated to at least go through the motions here? I mean, you're saying don't even go through the motions. Why?
Correct. Well, we will go through the motions, but not while Barack Obama's in the White House.
Well, why? Do presidential terms end after 3 years? I mean, that's what I don't understand is why not go through the advice and consent? You don't have to approve it. You can reject it. That's what happened in 68. But why not go through this process?
Because it's not just for the Supreme Court, even for appellate courts. It's been both parties have followed this precedent. There comes a point in the last...
Except they haven't.
Last year of the president, especially in their second term, where you stop nominating or you stop the advice and consent process. You basically say at this point, with a few months left in your term, no accountability from the ballot box on the appointment you're going to make on a lifetime
We're
appointment.
11
I mean, that's
months.
The important thing here. These are not laws that can be
I understand that, but
yeah, right. But these are not laws that can be reversed. In essence, this is a lifetime appointment to the highest court in the country at a time when the nation's the balance of the Constitution and the court's interpretation of it is at stake. We're not moving forward on it. Mitch McConnell's already made that very clear. I support it 100%. Here's the bottom line. Right. I don't trust Barack Obama on the appointment of Supreme Court justices. We cannot afford to have Scalia replaced by someone like the nominees he's put there in the past. We're going to have an election. There's going to be a new president. I believe it's going to be me. And we're going to look for someone that most resembles Scalia to replace him.
Now, Senator, when you say
old, fat, and dying resembles Scalia? Okay. Well, we don't have to hear we don't have to hear little Marco say that again. We know what his position is. That the Senate should not do what the Senate is bound by the plain original language of the Constitution to do. Because, see, originalist Antonin Scalia would, I mean, if it suited him, if it would benefit a Republican, of course, call bullshit on the idea of we have a tradition, we have a precedent. Because, again, the original language, unalloyed, unamended, of Article 2, Section 2 of the Constitution, he shall nominate and by and with the consent of the Senate shall appoint ambassadors, yada, 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 Supreme Court. I would argue to you, as a longtime knower of words, a longtime practitioner of the art of word knowing, that shall does not just apply to nominate, but it speaks to the obligation of the Senate. Because there is an old rule, and when you go and have a cup of coffee in law school, they'll teach you these things. It's a very expensive cup of coffee, I can tell you. There are these things called rules of construction. And it doesn't mean it's a rule about, you know, how somebody builds something. Although I guess you could say, you know, rather attenuated sense it is. They are rules of how one construes the meaning of words. Rule, think of them as the rules of the art of word knowing. And one of those rules of construction says that one must judge a law upon the plain meaning of the language of it. Now, in order to get where little Marco Rubio has gotten, you've got to take the plain meaning of Article 2, Section 2 out behind the barn and axe handle it into a pulp, and then rearrange it to suit your own paranoid fantasies of an untrustworthy Barack Obama. Remember, it was two debates back now when Rubio got stuck in his little Barack Obama knows exactly what he's doing rut speech, whatever. In essence, he was accusing Barack Obama of committing treason against the United States, which is a pretty goddamned heady accusation to make against the president, especially when you don't have any evidence. But if you look at the plain meaning of, and he shall nominate and by and with the advice and consent of the Senate shall appoint the judges of the Supreme Court, there's no way that reading the original, hi Nino, hot enough for you, language of that passage to include if the Senate feels like it, or if some old bastard who looks more turtle than human has decided that the Negro doesn't get to appoint anybody else because he never wanted a Negro to be president in the first place. You can't get that out of that passage. You just can't. But that's what that man who looks more turtle than human has lately said. That any nominee that Barack Obama sends to the Senate ain't gonna get no hearing. Now, also, at the time that the Constitution was written, the Senate was a tiny little body. And I honestly don't know how old the Senate Judiciary Committee is. Maybe the Committee of the Whole, otherwise known as the Horn Family Community Congregation, can look that up. Or someone therein. Back then, the advice and consent of the Senate meant the whole Senate. And ultimately, that's still what it means, because no matter what the Judiciary Committee says, the whole Senate has a right to vote on the nomination. Okay? But Mitch McConnell now, and look, this is not complicated. This is politics. This is just brute force, bare-knuckle, mean-spirited, hateful, roll around in the filth in the gutter politics. The president has a lawful constitutional duty. That's what shall means. It's a duty. In other words, if he said, screw it, I'm not going to appoint anybody, you know what would happen? The Freedom Caucus over in the House of Representatives would institute impeachment proceedings immediately based upon the unwillingness of the President of the United States to fulfill a constitutional duty, which would be a high crime or misdemeanor. And frankly, it would be a more significant one than getting a blowjob or spooging on a blue dress. For which they've already run an impeachment not that long back. The refusal of the President of the United States to do his duty is grounds for removal from office. But Mitch McConnell, so he has to nominate somebody. He must. He absolutely must. He has no choice. And he shall nominate. But Chinless Mitch says he won't get a hearing. Again, this isn't rocket science. This isn't rocket surgery. If it's just business as usual, Barack Obama nominates a justice to the Supreme Court. Mitch McConnell issues orders to Chuck Grassley and says, no way do you let this guy or woman out of committee. Kill it. Have your hearings, vote against it, and then we'll vote it down in the body of the whole. Okay? McConnell isn't even willing to do that. Because here's the thinking. If Barack Obama gets to select a justice, any justice, then suddenly those cases that are 4-4 ties in which the no precedent can be established, well, they lose. And then if they lose the presidency, then if the Republican Party loses the presidency, that means that if there happens to be a Democratic Senate, too, I know there's a lot of ifs here, then Ruth Bader Ginsburg is free to retire. And maybe a young liberal justice would be appointed by, dear God, Bernie Sanders or Hillary Clinton. You see this playing out? Yeah, okay. The delegates to the Constitutional Convention of 1787 did not provide for congressional committees when they drafted the Constitution of the United States. Nevertheless, a select committee of eight senators, often suggested to be the precursor to the present-day Judiciary Committee, was appointed one day after the Senate first convened in 1789. Okay, so there's the answer to that part. And if the Senate simply says, no, you don't get this nominee, then he can send another one, because he still shall nominate. Because, again, there's no language in Article 2, Section 2 about, and if the Senate, there's nothing in there about what you do if the Senate doesn't. However, they do provide an out. Madison was no dummy. The final paragraph of Section 2 says the president shall have the power to fill up all vacancies that may happen during the recess of the Senate by granting commissions which shall expire at the end of their next session. The Senate is at present in recess. Now, a while back, the president made some appointments to the National Labor Relations Board while the Senate was in recess, but they were periodically coming back and because McConnell, and gaveling back into session so that they were nominally, just barely in session. And when that went up to the Supreme Court said, no. I mean, if that's what they do to stay in session, then they're in session. And you know what? It was the right ruling. But unless McConnell got somebody to run in and fart and bang the gavel today, they're in recess till February 22nd. And the only way for Barack Obama to end this impasse is to do a recess appointment, and his appointee would be sworn in and remain a justice of the Supreme Court until the end of this Congress. Because this is the final session of this Congress. 11 months, basically. Bully, I hear you say. He should do that. I've said it. I think he should punch him in the mouth. We've repeatedly been told that there are no more fucks to give in Barack Obama's big bag of fucks, but apparently there is. Because a presidential spokesman said to the publication The Hill that sorry, President Obama will not use his recess appointment power to fill the vacancy on the court. And you can understand the reasoning. Because all the little wingnuts, and you know, we've got this little program that hangs on by a shoestring, and thank you very kindly to Bob in Texas for taking a big chunk out of our fundraising goal this evening. We have only $110 left in it. Thank you very kindly, Bob. 11 at 10, 10 at 11, et cetera. One at 110, two at 55. But there are lots of right-wing radio programs. And there's lots of right-wing television. And there's lots of right-wing blogs. We're going to check one of those out here in a couple of minutes. And this country would go hopping up and down crazy if Barack Obama used the same recess appointment powers that a white president used three times during his 8 years in office, to wit, Dwight D. Eisenhower. But that's not the end of the analysis. Lots of people have opined because it's not clear. And unless you read it according to the plain language in which it is written, he shall nominate and by and with the advice of the consent of the Senate shall appoint. If you read that as meaning that the requirement upon both parties, the president and the Senate, is affirmative and mandatory, there's no issue. But, of course, there are people out there who want to see it otherwise. And one of those things you learn to do when you're going to, when you're having your cup of coffee in law school, one of the highest honors you can be accorded is to be on the law review. Mm-hmm. And as a law student, you can write little commentaries. It's kind of like the commentaries in The Art of War, you know. So-and-so says this, and somebody comments on it and says, well, that's what he meant. Well, let's go back to 1970, shall we? Here's a law review article. Now, I'm just going to read the paragraph that I've got in front of me. What standard, then, can be drawn for the Senate from the experiences of the past year in advising and consenting to presidential nominations to the Supreme Court? They have been set out, but should be reiterated in conclusion. At the outset, the Senate should discount the philosophy of the nominee. I'm going to say that again. The Senate should discount the philosophy of the nominee. That means liberal, wingnut, whatever. You don't get to take that into account. In our politically centrist society, I remember 1970. Do you remember 1970? In our politically centrist society, it is highly unlikely that any executive would nominate a man of such extreme views. It was 1970. We're not contemplating women being on the Supreme Court for a while yet. It is highly unlikely that any executive would nominate a man of such extreme views of the right, of the left, as to be disturbing to the Senate. However, a nomination, for example, of a communist or a member of the American Nazi Party would have to be considered an exception to the recommendation that the Senate leave ideological considerations to the discretion of the executive. That's a fancy way of saying elections have consequences, and as long as the president doesn't send an absolute raving lunatic to the Senate, that the Senate should advise and consent. The advise part, you know, maybe the president goes to the Senate and says, hey, I got to fill that. You know, what do y'all think? And Senator A says, somebody gives a name, Senator B, or maybe the majority gives a name and the minority gives a name, yada, yada, yada. That's advising. The consenting part comes when they vote on it. Political and philosophical considerations were often a factor in the 19th century, and arguably in the Parker, Haynesworth, and Carswell cases also. But this is not proper, and tends to degrade the court and dilute the constitutionally proper authority of the executive in this area. Dilute the authority. Because the authority is clearly granted by Article 2, Section 2. And there's nothing in there that says the Senate gets to take anything away from that. They advise and they consent. Or they don't consent. But they advise and consent. And then the President and the Senate appoint. Because it is the nominating and then the advising and consenting that results in the appointment. Now, listen carefully. The president is presumably elected by the people to carry out a program, and altering the ideological directions of the Supreme Court would seem to be a perfectly legitimate part of a presidential platform. To that end, the Constitution gives to him the power to nominate. As mentioned earlier, if the power to nominate had been given to the Senate, as was considered during the debates at the Constitutional Convention, then it would be proper for the Senate to consider political philosophy. The proper role of the Senate is to advise and consent to the particular nomination, and thus, as the Constitution puts it, to appoint. It's a law review article. From way, 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 way back, 46 years ago, 1970. the author of that is one Addison Mitch McConnell. Ta-da! This is what is commonly referred to as being hung on one's own petard. That. There. Precisely. Exactly. Ron, up in the seriously frozen north. Really? 40 below? God damn. Says, you go, Bob. And by the way, the legal genius asshole is still dead. I've been keeping my third eye out, and he's still in the wind. What else? GK says, Bob, it sounds like Lady Justice has him by the short hairs. How delightful. I don't know that that's the case. Brother Deacon Asa out in Vancouver says, Re-Uncle Nino, Bob, they keep saying he was found dead with not as much as a single piece of photographic evidence. How do we know this wasn't one of those hunting trips whereby Dick Cheney turns a fellow hunter's face into hamburger? Inquiring minds want to know. Yes, I know. I'm sure you're asking for a friend, Asa. Yeah, well, it's gotten weirder. They had to confirm his death by phone. No, really. You can do that in Texas. In the state of Texas, a coroner can declare death by phone call. The hotel proprietor picks up the phone, speaks to the coroner, and says, he's dead, Jane. And he's dead. Mm-hmm. More on that in a minute. Note coming in from Jennifer and Graham. At the beginning of the program, I mentioned the phrase via Kurt Vonnegut, come unstuck in time. Jennifer says, unstuck in time? I pulled this from the trash, scribbled madly Sunday morning our time when I was nudged awake with coffee in the laptop alone and in an hypothyroid stupor. I thought it was Monday and even more muddled that it was more in Monday. In my defense, the Titanic plates had just shifted. Schadenfreude warning. Note. I know. Children and a wife have lost a dad and a husband, respectively, but this is in reference to the blight on our democracy. I was launched from sleepy groggy to cartoon character, eyes popped open awake, when I read Scalia is... What? This was followed by the immediate swat off my shoulder of my cartoon angel who was saying, now, Jennifer, be good. It's never nice to... Fuck that crap, angel, I said, turning to my cartoon devil and screeching, woohoo! Devil, let's dance. And we did, to David Bowie, from room to room as the conversation continued. So, devil of mine, did the odious apneatic bastard choke on his own neck lard, or did his putrid, withering heart finally collapse under the strain of his corrosive ignorance? I'd wager that HuffPo, from Seminole News Centrum to Shameless Slime Dumpster, has at some point run on the right side, current affairsy column, scrolling past, 9 ways blueberries will blow your mind, and 10 ways to detect if your pet is plotting world domination, 25 of humanity's most brutal methods of torture. On that list, there would not be a way to stop me from being this gleeful about a man's demise. When the music stopped, I opened the Daily Kos alert to read, he was at a ranch, a Coke-owned weekender, with 40 people, a nest of ALEC-associated lobbyists, and that he just died. Well, isn't that just, what's that, better late than never? Oh, you devil you. Jennifer and I have the same little Fred Flintstone devil on our shoulders. Surely more information will come to light, but if it turns out that another hunting weekend was euphemistically a Coke secret symposium on wanting it all and how to get it by killing as many innocents as possible, then I will lament that a food-dispersed pathogen didn't take out all 40 of them. It's 2 days later, and I'm still dancing in celebration that there's one less asshole moron in the world. I know they breed and multiply, but some are worse than others, and that, oh, what's that, Angel? Be nice? Sorry, no. That one so needed to stop being bad at his job, and there was only one way that was going to happen. Graham notes, no doubt many other people died in the exact same instant who were neither good nor bad, or maybe good and bad, but never in one instant of their lives ever as destructive as Antonin Scalia. For those people, I will dedicate a passing moment. Not him. Jennifer continues, ABC, Antonin Benito Scalia, got his XYZ. Silver lining? Will this filthy McConnell, who voted to confirm Reagan's final year justice, lead an attempt to prevent Obama from doing his job, finally get the president to take his bloody gloves off? No. No. Because instead we're going to play 11D-dimensional chess, and we're not going to use the constitutional power. And, hey, look, there's that word shall again. The president shall have power to fill up all vacancies that may happen during the recess of the Senate by granting commissions which shall expire at the end of their next session. Did Barack Obama just invalidate my entire argument? So, I think we've got a pretty solid picture of where we're at. But just a little more, if I may. I think back to Nicole Williamson, one of my favorite movie lines. I really ought to get it and set it in as a drop. Comes from Excalibur. He played Merlin. You've heard me use it before. Merlin says, "For it is the doom of men that they forget." Sounds kind of like a male Katharine Hepburn, Nicole Williamson did. That was his name, wasn't it? But it's true. We do forget. We have seen not we, you, me. But history has seen, and history is there for anyone who wishes to know it. These sorts of things play out. I give you a name. Marcus Calpurnius Bibulus. It was 59 BCE when he was elected consul of Rome. Oh, God, he's gone off to Rome again. Yeah. It was 59 BCE when Marcus Calpurnius Bibulus was elected consul of Rome. Now, in an attempt to keep anybody from acquiring too much power, the founders of the Roman Republic system, to the extent that there was any one particular group, well, some rules were promulgated. And so they didn't just have one consul, they had two. and consuls were elected every year, and generally speaking, you did not elect a consul year after year. Everybody got a turn, because everybody in ancient Rome was absolute ass-crazy for power. It was all tied into notions of dignitas and potentas and other nouns. So somewhere around 59 BCE, Marcus Calpurnius Bibulus was elected consul, and the man elected to serve as his co-consul for the consular year was a man named Gaius Julius Caesar. Caesar. This is before he went off to the Gallic Wars. He was a struggling, youngish politician, probably just entering his 40s. And Marcus Calpurnius Bibulus hated the very air that Gaius Julius Caesar breathed. He hated the idea that Gaius Julius Caesar was on the planet. He despised everything that Gaius Julius Caesar stood for, because Gaius Julius Caesar had these crazy notions that maybe somebody besides 0.1% of the people of the Roman Republic should benefit from the wealth that had begun to flow in to said Roman Republic. And here's what Marcus Calpurnius Bibulus did. He refused to do his damn job. The consuls would swap out month by month running the Senate. 1 month Caesar, 1 month Bibulus, 1 month Caesar, 1 month Bibulus. And that continuity was required in order for either one to get anything done. So, having found out that he was going to have to share the consular year with Gaius Julius Caesar, Marcus Calpurnius Bibulus, who was really a little pissant of a man, declared that he would not do his job and that he would instead retire to his estate thereat to spend his time watching the heavens for signs, portents, and omens. Because any time that a vote was scheduled on a piece of legislation, an omen, appropriately interpreted, could be used to halt the proceedings. This Bibulus then did. With the summary effect that he rendered the entire machinery of the government of the Republic of Rome inoperable. And nobody could do a damn thing about it. The problem with that philosophy, though, is that it rather quickly leads to insurmountable problems. It really does. And in the behavior of Marcus Calpurnius Bibulus were sown the seeds of what, a few years later, would result in the end of Republican government and the rise of empire. Short of declaring that he is going home to watch the heavens for signs, portents, and omens. Mitch McConnell is our modern equivalent of Marcus Calpurnius Bibulus. The only way for Barack Obama to fulfill his obligation would be to appoint as a recess appointment pursuant to the final paragraph of Article 2, Section 2 of the Constitution of the United States, a justice to the Supreme Court to serve until the end of this senatorial session. To wit, till the end of the year. Otherwise, he must nominate. He has, as I've said, no choice. He shall. And don't think for a minute that the freaks over in the House, like I said, wouldn't jump on that, jump on his refusal to nominate like a duck on a June bug. So he must make a nomination. The Constitution is out the window and long gone, however, where Mitch McConnell's concerned, for even though he wrote exactly what should happen back in 1970, 46 years ago, he now refuses to do what he wrote must be done. The goddess of irony, well, she plays rough. Now, to be absolutely clear, as we come to the end of this damn two-hour filibuster, the Senate, whether I like it or not, is perfectly within its rights to receive the nomination and then vote it down and reject it. They are not within their rights to not consider the nomination at all, unless they are willing to simply suspend the Senate and go home and watch the skies for portents, signs, and omens. By God, you can almost imagine Ted Cruz going back to Texas or Canada or Cuba or somewhere and opening up the entrails of a chicken with his daddy speaking tongues behind him. But no, Ted Cruz has at least said, well, I will filibuster any nomination. That's your right, Ted. But there has to be a nomination, and there has to be consideration of it. Poor stupid checker player McConnell was trying to maneuver Obama into saying, well, all right, then I won't nominate anybody. At which point, again, see above, supra, the impeachment hearings would begin. What this all boils down to, and I want to add one more thing into the mix. What this all boils down to is that we are in, like it or no, a constitutional crisis. A couple of years ago, when they shut the government down, I argued that we misinterpreted and misunderstood the actions of the Republican Congress. I argued that that was not merely a manifestation of some sort of political tantrum, but that, in fact, the Republican Party had become an open insurgency against the very idea of constitutional governance. Well, the seasons have passed. The poisonous tree has blossomed, and its fruit is hanging ripe. It was a week or so ago that President Obama delivered, again, as he is required by his oath of office to do, President Obama had delivered unto the House of Representatives of the United States a budget. Contrary to the standing rules of order of the House of Representatives, the Speaker of that House, little Eddie Munster Paul Ryan, gave instructions that the House would not even receive the proposed budget. Now, we've had lots of political shenanigans and goings on and backs and forth and squabbles almost outright warfare among the branches of government. But it was pretty shocking to see the leader of the House of Representatives absolutely refuse to even receive a communication from the twice elected President of the United States. And now this in the Senate. This is an open insurgency. The cold civil war that I've been talking about for years is getting warmer and warmer and warmer. These Republicans in the House and Senate are emboldened, and they have told themselves to the point of conviction that they are supported by a majority of the people of the United States to do anything to stop that one in their White House from using any of the constitutional powers granted to the President of the United States. They could have manifested little more hostility than if they had simply declared war. That's where we are. We are in, right now, a constitutional crisis. I'm not screaming, not carrying on, not hooting and hollering, because it is that important. There's no play in this. This isn't fun. This isn't joyful. This is real. Constitutional crises are not pleasant. We're talking about one branch of government that has absolutely abdicated its responsibility to govern, and in so doing has effectively crippled another branch of government, and along the way has taken the third with it. Certain portions of the machinery of government will continue to chug along. Social Security checks will keep going out. Veterans benefits, to the extent that they're even sufficient, will continue to be paid. Embassies will remain open. The military will be paid. But the government itself, or the Republicans in it, have effectively ground the legislative business, the civic business of the Republic, the Union, to a standstill. Jennifer asks, if they force him to make a recess appointment, let Obama make it a doozy. If he can't dig up Molly Ivins, let it be someone like Howard Zinn or Noam Chomsky. He needs to stick it to him. And Jennifer asks, does the individual have to be a lawyer? No. No, the Supreme Court justice is not required to be a lawyer. Weird, huh? Look, the easiest thing in the world to do would be to take someone who for long and long has been a member of their own body and make the recess appointment. Hi, Joe Biden. What are you doing, buddy? Ever wanted to be a Supreme Court justice? Yeah? Probably be a dandy. But he's already said, through a White House spokesperson speaking to The Hill, that there will be no recess appointment. So we're stuck. And everything in this depends upon the optics of the politics. What they're counting on is that America will say, well, that Republican Senate sure is behaving irresponsibly. My goodness gracious, we must certainly do something about that. And vote the filthy bastards out in November while sweeping a Democrat into the White House. Yeah, that's a hell of a dice roll. There are a bunch of senators up for re-election this year, but no more than a handful, 5, 6 tops, could possibly wind up being Democratic wins. The Democrats have to hold on to Colorado. With Russ Feingold running against Ron Johnson in Wisconsin, we'd like to count that as a win, but, well, that's been a loss in the past. There are the only way to be certain of an election is to run unopposed. Illinois, Mark Kirk. Alabama, Jefferson Davis, Beauregard, Sessions, the Hood. He's up for re-election. Oh, by golly, those constitutionalists of the state of Alabama, they're not going to put up with any guff. They'll punish Jeff Sessions. Please. Yeah. I guess there's always a possibility, as Carol Baker notes, that Barack Obama had his fingers crossed behind his back or the White House spokesman did when they said he won't do a recess appointment. But you also know what the response would be all over the country. That tyrannical tyrant Barack Hussein Obama is destroying our country. The greatest country in the world on earth now today, forever in the universe. Hallelujah, under God, amen. Hell, your radio's so controlled by the right wing anyway, would probably turn themselves on to screech that crap at you. I like the way you think, Ray. Ray says, please appoint Hillary, please. You know, you could probably get the other two out of that trifecta if you did that, President Obama. A recess appointment of Joe Biden would suit me right down to the ground. Now, it would not be unprecedented to appoint Hillary. Once upon a time, there was a president by the name of Abraham Lincoln, and he had this Treasury Secretary by the name of Salmon P. Chase. Salmon? I don't know. And Salmon P. Chase was an egomaniacal grasping rung climber. And he said all kinds of scurrilous, spurious crap about President Lincoln. And then, lo and behold, an opening miraculously appeared on the Supreme Court. And Salmon P. Chase had convinced himself that it was his destiny to be the next president of the United States, and he was actually planning, some say, on running against Lincoln should he seek, you know, a third term. But then, destiny intervened, and Lincoln called him over and said, "Sal, old buddy," because we're buddies, aren't we, Sal? Of course we're buddies. You know, we've got a vacancy on the Supreme Court, and we need a mind like a steel trap over there. And well, I wouldn't feel right about myself if I didn't nominate you to that vacancy. You're going to be a Supreme Court justice, Sal, buddy. And he was kind of in a box, and he couldn't do anything about it. And he said, "Well, sure, Mr. President, be happy to." And Lincoln got Salmon P. Chase out of his hair. Carol says, "You know, the president is under an oath to protect and defend the Constitution, as opposed to all those right-wingers and Republicans and whatnot who say, the first duty of the president is to keep us safe." No. It's to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States, which at present, by virtue of the assertion of Mitch McConnell, is, in fact, in jeopardy. In crisis. That's why they call them constitutional crises. Let's check back with a couple other emails. Bob in Texas says, "Do you ever get the feeling that the Dems play the role of the Washington Generals to the Republicans' Harlem Globetrotters?" All the time. All the time. Robert in Australia says, "Pity you can't perform a double dissolution." Yeah, ain't it? Do over. And then the marvelously coherent Diane in Kansas stand says, "Did I miss something? I am not convinced that President Obama should have dismissed the recess appointment option so soon. He's so quick to rule out all his options." Well, maybe it's a 11D dimensional chess, Diane. Maybe by saying he won't do it, Addison McConnell won't run in and gavel, have somebody fart and gavel the thing into business and gavel the Senate out of business every day, giving Barack Obama a chance to find somebody to nominate. Now, the person who immediately came out or emerged as the go-to guy is a relatively young jurist. I think he's 49 years old. Presently sitting on the D.C. Circuit by the name of Sri Srinivasan. Took me all weekend to learn how to say that. I've been practicing. He and his family emigrated from India to Kansas, Diane, way back when, and his daddy was a college professor. And Sri Srinivasan studied diligently, left Kansas, and wound up going to, I believe, Stanford Law School. In 2013, he was confirmed by the Senate of the United States to the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals by a vote of 97-0. Mm-hmm. So, theoretically, he would be kind of hard to just reject out of hand. problem is, well, lawyers, and he was a lawyer. He's not one of these people who's been a judge all his life or an academic or a constitutional law professor. Because God knows we wouldn't want one of those. Well, he did his client's bidding. One of his clients was a cat by the name of Jeffrey Skilling. Remember Jeffrey Skilling? The guy who finagled and robbed and stole and drove Enron into the ground and let everybody take the fall, even though he knew it was coming. Yeah, he represented Jeffrey Skilling. He was defense trial counsel. Then there was the time that he was defense appellate counsel for the Exxon Corporation. Now, in the Exxon Corporation case, he was arguing over something called the Alien Tort Claims Act, which has been used of late by people that American transnational corporations have tortured and killed. And Sri Srinivasan made an argument in that case representing Exxon that of course Exxon has the right to torture and kill Malaysian people. Of course they do. And that silly old Alien Tort Claims Act just didn't apply. This is the guy who is said to be the inside track to being the replacement for Justice Antonin Scalia. Yeah, what's that, Tony? You didn't think it would be this hot in heaven. Buddy. Lean over there and ask Richard Nixon to tell you where the hell you are. No, really, where the hell you are. Well, this is getting pretty epic at this point in time. It's a 2-hour and 11-minute filibobster. So what do you say we open the phones or look into some other stuff? Who knows what? But I'd kind of like to take a little break. And along the way, I'd like to thank our buddy David from South Carolina for taking us from $110 to go down to $89 to go in fundraising for this evening. Thank you very, very kindly, David. And let's see, a note from Jennifer before we go. Thank you, Diane, the marvelously coherent Diane from Kansastan. I think I must change that to, God damn if I am not so sick of his unreasonableness. There we go. So, yeah, break time. We'll be back. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Nope, wrong. There we go. You know what we need? More Thomas.
Take my hand, don't feel the reaper.
I come to bury Scalia, not to praise him. The evil that men do lives after them. The good is oft interred with their bones. So let it be with Scalia. The evil that men do lives after them. God, isn't that the truth, especially where Supreme Court justices are concerned? How long after his death did the evil Roger Taney did live? How long after their various deaths did the court that gave us Plessy versus Ferguson live on? How long will the evil of Rehnquist and Scalia and Thomas and Kennedy and O'Connor in giving us the reign of error live on? It was a sharp one, that Shakespeare. Brother Deacon Asus is a... I don't think you've done a two-hour filibuster since you were in D.C. for the last ACAC get-together, Bob. Well, I was on my way to a three-hour one. Well, no, this is even... Let's see, there's the Return from Germany filibuster. And that was near 3 hours. And the return from... the derecho was on its way to being one of those when it was cut short. But this is worth it. This is worth it. Now, where Scalia's death is concerned, the right wing has, of course, lost its itsy bitsy tiny little mind. Murder conspiracies now abound because that's the kind of country we are. I ran across this particular thing at a website called Solomon's Porch. It bills itself as Jewish Learning Center. Let's restore the ancient path of the Torah. Natch. That's why we've got a dispatch from this guy.
Emergency transmission. Associate Supreme Court Justice.
Wait, let's get it all from the beginning.
My friends, it's Saturday night. This is an emergency transmission. Associate Supreme Court Justice Anthony Scalia died earlier today at a ranch outside Big Bend in South Texas, one of my favorite places to visit. I shot a Facebook mentions just earlier today, right after he died, not knowing that he just died, pointing out the fact that we've talked to Matt Drudge and others who talked to Supreme Court justices about the fact that in 2016 they planned to kill the Bill of Rights and Constitution. The question is, was Anthony Scalia murdered? And the answer to that is...
Well, the answer to that is Anthony Scalia may have been murdered, Alex Jones. But Antonin Scalia was the justice of the Supreme Court. This is an emergency transmission. Good God, he sounds like the automated vocoder that does the EBS now. An emergency transmission? It's not a transmission at all. Hell, it's not a distributor cap. What is he, on Norblap 12? Yeah, I know, Carol Baker. Ooh, an emergency transmission. Matt Drudge has talked to somebody on the Supreme Court, and Obama's going to kill the Bill of Rights this year. We've got that part, right?
Okay.
Has the Bill of Rights and Constitution been murdered? Has it been reported that members of the Supreme Court have been blackmailed? Yes, it has.
Not by anybody who doesn't live under a bell jar, Alex.
Does the president order the borders open outside of federal law? Yes. Does he order coal power plants shut down outside of law? Yes.
No.
Does he fund ISIS outside of law? Yes.
No.
Has the TPP been signed, a global treaty waiving our sovereignty and secrecy? Yes.
Well, okay.
This is the season of treason.
Ooh, that rhymes.
This is the time of betrayal.
8:24. No, not that, Gerald.
And we would be fools not to ask the question, was this stalwart defender of the Constitution compared to the Democrats, all these weird nobody judges, Sotomayor and others they've been appointing, who just literally say ban the First Amendment, Second Amendment, Fourth, Tenth, I mean, flaming tyrants.
Except for the fact that all of those flaming tyrants voted as one to protect the rights of sweet Granny McCluckin to stick pictures of aborted fetuses and fetuses generally in the faces of women who are going to get a fucking pap smear, Alex, you goddamned idiot. And ban the First Amendment.
What kind of wart? Diane, I'm getting lost. I mean, Carol, I'm getting lost. Diane, help. I don't know. I got to do a better job of keeping cheap tequila in here. Jim says, no, Bob, this sounds like Levitan announcing the death of Stalin in 1953. Never heard that one.
Well, the feds announced last week they're going to have monitors on every family with their kids, and the state is co-parents. I mean, it's happening.
I missed the memo. The feds announced that, did they? Monitors on every parent. It's going to get a little pricey. Well, Carol, I don't do Limbaugh Radio, but sometimes you got to have some. Limbaugh Radio is officially chewing up OxyContins for the refreshing burst of flavor all during the program and before and after. You can't hardly blame me for sticking the swirly straw in a bottle of tequila and taking a pull just to get through this stuff now, can you? I mean, that's the medicinal application of tequila, I'd say.
Honey. I'm going to get to the governor of Texas' statement here in a minute I've got. Greg Abbott. But we know there is a foreign offshore coup over this country. And I know Breitbart had his own issues. But within an hour and a half, I was up that night when it was announced he'd gone to the hospital. Within an hour and a half of him going to the hospital, they announced, it appears to be natural causes, says the coroner. Nothing to see here. Move along.
I mean, you know, he was a bit of an addict, and he did collapse on a sidewalk. And you know, it is absolutely baffling that a 79-year-old man, what did the guy say on Facebook? A 79-year-old man who gets less exercise than Stephen Hawking would die in his bed? Baffling. Absolutely baffling. They say he was in his pajamas.
I'll believe that when I see it.
I didn't know they made Catholic schoolgirl pajamas, but do continue, Alex.
And I have studied this so many times, interviewing whistleblowers who would die of a heart attack a week later.
Jesus.
Alex?
When you were interviewing the whistleblowers who would die of a heart attack a week later, did you suggest they might want to go to the doctor? Yeah, you're not looking so good there, buddy.
A new world order got him. Obama.
I've got proof. Oh,
like Mary Jennings, the deputy head of New York Emergency Management, was dead after a week he was on my show.
Kind of suggests maybe you don't want to go, you shouldn't go on the Alex Jones program. And then, you know, then there's the other side of the coin with all of these, the hissy being had by the wing nuts, especially in the Senate. Oh, Barack Obama doesn't get to appoint nominate a successor to Justice Scalia because it's the last year of his presidency. Mitch, Addison, dude, you do realize you just said you wish to hell that if Scalia would have had the common decency to kick the bucket a year earlier, you would have at least had the common decency to, you know, reject the nominee instead of refusing to hold hearings at all. I mean, you got that part of it there, don't you, Addison? Don't you? Yeah, I thought so. Yeah. Well, no, actually, no. Back then, we would have said that the midterm elections was just now over, and that because of that, clearly the the people of the new United States had rejected the communist Muslim usurper philosophies of Barack Hussein Obama, and therefore no hearings could be had.
You see how it works, right?
Exposing all sorts of corruption. And so every time they kill somebody, you have to know state and federal law. It takes at least a week for a coroner or medical examiner, depending on the state, sometimes a month, some states have a month, to say the cause of death or to make any comments, because they have laws against just saying, you know, somebody died, but it was natural causes, we think, before their body's even cold.
Except in Texas, where they don't have that law.
In Texas, you can declare somebody dead over the phone. Really? Not kidding. And of course, do you blame Senora Scalia for saying no, she didn't want his body all cut up? Because the family rejected the autopsy. The Trilateral Commission or the Bohemian Grove or the Learned Elders of Zion or the Freemasons or the Shriners or the Oddfellas or what the ever, Alex, are not the ones who prevented there being an autopsy. That one's on Mrs. Scalia. For understandable reasons. Because, see, outside the fevered ravings of Alex Jones are some facts. Uncle Nino was in poor health. He'd been to the doctor. Remember, he had the best health care the American people can provide. But he also had a lot of bad habits. Things that tend to shorten life expectancies. And he'd been to the doctor and he wasn't in good shape, but nonetheless, he apparently could not resist a free trip, because this was another one of those. So he flew apparently from D.C. to Houston, and then he flew some sort of charter, hell, maybe it was a charter out of D.C., from Houston to that corner of West Texas down by Big Bend. Which, interestingly, is a gorgeous place, and if you've ever seen that early Kevin Costner movie, Fandango, it centers prominently in there. I recommend the movie highly. So, and he was out miles and miles and miles and miles and miles and miles and miles away, because you can get out in that kind of wilderness out there at the Cibolo Ranch with no medical help anywhere in sight. You reckon he just wanted to get away from the shrieking and the screeching of D.C.? Just go out and shoot a few captive birds or walk around and watch some people shoot some captive birds. I mean, it was pretty clear through his holdings on the bench that he was into death. And relax a little bit. Maybe. But there are people who, again, live in bell jars, who believe this kind of crap that Alex Jones is putting forward. They killed Scalia just like they killed poor Breitbart. So Subject line, emergency transmission. David in South Carolina writes, I once bought a used purple Ford Escort with an automatic transmission. Transmission failed four times the year that I owned the car. Finally sold it to the I Buy Junk Cars man. Whenever I hear emergency transmission, I think of being pulled over on the shoulder of a two-lane blacktop waiting for a tow truck to come get me. Sure, David, sure. An Illuminati tow truck. Carol Baker says, I killed Breitbart. I'm Spartacus. Gerald says, Obama's last year. Yeah, that's not how that works. Not even a little bit, Gerald. No. Jennifer in Australia says, Alex Jones is an insult to dumb and such a scared little bunny. Hey, Bob, with your familiarity with the reverb, how does he manage to sound like he's talking from inside a rabbit hole? He's in the toilet. Yes. Now, this is weird. He's standing in front of a blue curtain, and he's all red in the face. Maybe he's that way all the time. Oh, I don't know, Alex. The Illuminati might be after you too, buddy.
So before Scalia's body is even cold in the middle of nowhere in South Texas, I mean, you got to drive an hour to find a gas station. I know that ranch. I've stayed at a hotel down the road from it.
Because you damn sure haven't stayed on that ranch. The ranch is owned by a guy named John Poindexter. No, not that John Poindexter. Plenty of paranoia going on around that because, Barack Obama said he was a decent human being or something. That's probably in here, too.
Carolingua. And at the La Jinta's Lodge. I mean, I go down there like once a year. I've been down there like 30-something times in my life. I was there 2 months ago, 3 months ago with my family. It would take them hours just to get him to a medical facility. But they say, in the afternoon, he didn't respond, so they found him dead in his hotel room. Oh, yeah, right, at some ranch. I get it, he's 79.
Because nobody ever dies in a hotel room at a ranch. Hell, we were doing lobby work in D.C. one year, and it just creeped the living bejesus out of the kids because, like, the guy in the next room just... cue face, you know, the next thing you know, there's a gurney going down the hall. That took some explaining. You don't want to do the whole what is death thing too early with it, but no.
And all of it. But they should have said, cause of death has not been determined until the coroner rules. And you think, he's old, something must have happened. Instantly, it's in the playbook, and I've dealt with this myself personally.
Yeah, because he's got the playbook. I mean, is this just mind-boggling to you? These are the same people. I mean, they're even if they're not religious fundamentalists, they're like religious fundamentalists. They live in a demon-haunted world. Hey, sort this out, would you? Gerald says, no, I killed Breitbart. I'm Spartacus. Okay, who wants to be next? This is apparently officially a thing now.
When they kill somebody, they say, it appears to be natural cause, there's nothing to see. Not just Breitbart. I didn't realize how big Gary Webb was.
Huh? I don't even know who Gary Webb is. I don't know if he's big, tall, short, broad. Ronald Reagan, the assassination. Oh, wait. Oh, no. No. I just realized something. The next big New York Times bestseller, with one of those weird little diacritical marks next to the number one, Bill O'Reilly killing Scalia. Oh, let's see what this is. Coming from the angry Indian. Texas judge disclosed details about Scalia's health. Dateline Washington, Associated Press, the Texas County judge who decided no autopsy was needed following the death of Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia, has disclosed new details about Scalia's health in the days before he died. Well, sure he did. He's a member of the Elks. Presidio County Judge Cinderella Guevara, no, really, told the Associated Press on Monday, and a county judge in Texas, if I'm right, Texans tell me if I'm wrong. County judge in Texas doesn't mean, that's like your county commissioner anywhere else. She spoke with Scalia's doctor on the day he was found dead in his room of a dead in his room at a remote Texas ranch. She said the doctor told her that Scalia had a history of heart trouble, high blood pressure, and was considered too weak to undergo surgery for a recent shoulder injury. Those details are seemingly at odds with recollections of friends who described Scalia as his usual happy self. Well, I mean, he was always happy when he was crapping on somebody who didn't deserve it. Now, wasn't he? During the days leading up to his death, news that the 79-year-old justice was in declining health may come as a surprise to the public, but unlike presidents, the high court's members don't provide regular health disclosures. So they basically got his corpse out of there, got it on the road, got it to a funeral home, and, you know, prepared it for shipping. That doesn't work. That does not work for Alex Jones. Right, exactly, Carol Baker. Cause of death has not been determined until Dr. Alex Jones determines the cause of death. Oh, you guys are awful. Jennifer said, shoulder troubles? His cartoon angel bit him? Oh, it was you, was it, Ron? No, Ron says, I killed Breitbart. I'm Spartacus. In the billiard room with the lead pipe, Colonel Mustard. Back to you, Alex.
Of the Dark Alliance series, San Jose Mercury, about the CIA and drug dealing. I knew the government was dealing drugs. I've been in congressional hearings. What was the point of his series? I'd had him on as a guest.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Gary Webb.
Before the Bin Laden raid that was fake.
And oh, wait. No, we care.
And they have a leftist push it, so the left goes, we have the court engage in its agenda. And now Scalia dies. I mean, this is hardcore. And you've had Roberts and others that were saying one thing against Obamacare and Alito, and then they switch it. I mean, it's come out that the NSA's spying on them, whether it's a mistress or whatever it is. The point is, weird stuff's happening. I mean, Obamacare is about as constitutional as Mao Zedong or Adolf Hitler. I mean, you know, foreign banks ride it to triple your prices and cut your care. And they have a leftist push it, so the left goes, give my free health care. Oh, it's not free. Well, Bernie will give it to me next. You know, it's the next level of the con.
Jesus Christ. Maybe this is entertaining. I mean, it's a little entertaining to me, but I'm beginning to get sad. Really, Alex, is Thorazine right for you? Ask your physician. And he's a millionaire. A millionaire. Oh, did I mention? Yeah, we've got $89 to finish up fundraising for the evening. We've got 15 minutes to do that in. It'd be nice to finish not in a hole. In the Great Northwest, under the subject line, Fat Slob Ate Too Much, Cindy said he was a major rich food pig, and he just returned from hiking all over the local hills to hunt, and he dropped dead from an overworked heart. He should have counted his cholesterol, or is that colorectal? Hey, no making fun of high cholesterol. Some of us have no choice in the matter. I mean, really, 10,000 years of genetically training ourselves to store fat in the frozen tundra. We finally get somewhere that it gets warm once in a while, and, well, it takes a while for the genes to catch up. Jennifer says, ew, he said hardcore out of his mouth. That's just wrong. And yes, Carol, I do appreciate you bringing me in off the ledge. Okay, thanks, Kim from New York City. I think he means Gary Webb, the reporter for the San Jose Mercury who wrote about drugs in the CIA. That's the one. That's the one. Ron in Raleigh writes, the question then arises, if all these folks that are whistleblowers end up dead, wouldn't it be reasonable for the greatest whistleblower, Alex Jones, to have at some point in time, you know, been offed?
Yeah, but they know that would look so obvious.
Okay, Gerald says, no, I'm Spartacus. I'm Spartacus, and so's my wife. But there's no getting around the fact that that one, the Kenyan Muslim usurper in our White House, there's no getting around the fact that something big and nasty is in the works. For instance, one person posts, the NRA is ringing the alarm bells loudly that the sad death... Well, do you ever ring the alarm bells softly? I know you beat the drum slowly and play the dead march, but really. The NRA is ringing the alarm bells loudly that the sad death of Justice Antonin Scalia puts the Second Amendment in extreme jeopardy. Obama didn't even wait for Scalia's body to cool. Wait, we just heard the cold. What is it with these fascinations with dead bodies? We got the same thing from Alex Jones. Before he took to the airwaves to declare he would nominate a replacement for him on the Supreme Court. How dare that Kenyan Muslim usurper use modern broadcast technology to announce that he will do the job that the Constitution has required him to do by oath. How dare he? Oh, that uppity Kenyan usurper. Oh. In fact, yesterday I heard he would do a recess appointment to bypass Congress on the appointment. A whole raft of issues hang in the balance, and he could tip a tied court in favor of them. In favor of the balance? In favor? What? Gun rights, abortion, Obamacare. What? In favor of them, gun rights. So he could tip the balance in favor of gun rights? Abortion, Obamacare, and immigration are all at stake here. Speaking of stakes, has anyone... Never mind. Garlic? And who's to say Obama won't appoint a crony like Eric Holder or a Muslim to the bench? At which point, reading that, I had to run off to the Wikipedia and find out real quick the religious preference of Sri Srinivasan, because that would have just been too good. But no, he's a different kind of heathen. He's a Hindu. Listen, you guys sort it out. Whichever one of you is Spartacus. Well, the right wing will have a hissy over that. And maybe that's the fun he'll have. America's first non-monotheistic Supreme Court justice. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, really, Marvelline. I heard that. I heard that Spree Shina Vista. I heard he's one of them Hare Krishnas. He probably won't even wear a black robe on the Supreme Court. He probably wear one of them yaller ones. Probably offer to sell you a daisy or something before you start your arguments. America is falling. We used to be a great country. Now we're just full of foreigners. How can you expect one of them to even understand what a constitution is? He probably don't even think we need to have under God in it like they done put there. What? They didn't. Well, when they take it out, you can't turn your back on them liberals for a minute. Next thing you'll be saying that they wasn't there in the first... It was? Oh, it's worse than I thought. Them framers was liberals too. Meanwhile, in South Carolina, David says, I'm waiting for the Obama's going to appoint a... to slip out of one of their mouths. Well, I mean, for all intents and purposes, I mean, Sri Srinivasan is not white. But it also puts him in a little bit of a trick box because being as how he's from the Indian subcontinent and he's not a Muslim, then it's going to be kind of hard not to notice, you know, her... Nimrata over there in South Carolina. But the dangers are great and growing. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. How do I know? Because I read Mr. Conservative. Obama quietly orders $1 billion worth of disposable FEMA coffins. Oh my God. Obama has been operating behind the scenes to prepare an action in case of an American revolt that will not only squash a revolution, but kill many of its participants. The first step of this action would be to disarm the American people and throw anyone that is or might be a threat into a detention center. Wait a minute. FEMA camp! During the course of the revolt, many will die, both in battle and in the camps, an inevitable circumstance Obama is already preparing for. The current president of the United States, amongst other things, has already ordered $1 billion worth of disposable coffin liners around the country. Is stored the 5 million what will be FEMA coffins in various locations. According to landowners, none of whom are named in this article, the CDC is leasing land in order to store the strangely large amounts of coffins on their land. A man who recently stumbled across a stockpile of the top-secret government purchase claims the what look like plastic bins to be multi-use creation containers. He's so afraid we can't tell you his name. Okay, I added that part. There's just no names. The containers are excessively large for one person. Are they? Really? I mean, one of these might have come in handy a couple of days ago. Just saying. And as the commentator notes, who has no name, could hold three or four bodies, maybe more. He continues to state that the containers under patent number 5425163 are cremation containers for multiple bodies that generate very little pollution. Oh, see? He's even using the great climate change hoax for his Obama FEMA coffins. Along with this, the Department of Homeland Security has also ordered their own stockpile of 14 million body bags. What could cause the government to make such purchases in anticipation of so many deaths? Alex, can I have this one? See, climate change causes these things called natural disasters, like more hurricanes and more tornadoes. And see, there's this thing. When you've got dead people and you just stack them up like cordwood after the tornado's over, or you just sort of leave them bobbing in the fetid waters of the hurricane storm surge, there are these little things, these little critters called germs, or perhaps you've heard them referred to as microbes, or maybe viruses, or possibly bacteria. And they grow in dead bodies, alongside lots of other nasty things. So, after a natural disaster, of which we can probably expect several, I mean, just the way we screw around with climate change, and when you consider places like Flint and the West Virginia water crisis, and we don't have to wait for the terrorists to do anything or even the Obama administration to do anything, Alex. Mother Nature's doing it to us because of asshats like you who don't want to do anything about it. So we're going to need some FEMA coffins for the next time some a big old conservative hurricane comes and blows away a bunch of communities full of people who were quite sure that there was no such thing as climate change. Because the rest of us don't want to smell your rotting carcasses, Alex. And so there we are. And, hey, thanks, Glenn. We are now only at $79 to go to finish fundraising for the evening. Much appreciated, one and all, for getting us that close. Titanic Tuesday is tomorrow, and I'm almost afraid to see what it'll bring. Nah, I'm not. We'll have a blast. Thanks to everybody who keeps all of this going. Thanks to you who, with your kind contributions, keep it going. Thanks to you who, listening, yelling at the speakers, messaging me, calling, emailing, Facebooking, tweeting. Thank you. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thanks, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. And thanks, of course, always go out to the bravest, hardest-working people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 yes, Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.